Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino here with some bonus coverage around the Survivor finale. We ended up getting together, myself and Stephen Fishback, for a bonus Survivor Know-It-Alls special. Of course, Stephen and Hannah were live with the Know-It-Alls last night after the episode, but FanCred asked us to do a bonus show where people could call in on the FanCred app and talk to us, so I thought that that would be a fun opportunity to get to talk to Stephen on the day after the Survivor finale, something that we don't ever normally do. So what you're about to hear is the audio, the podcast version of that recording, which you can watch on FanCred app or on the FanCred YouTube. Hopefully we'll be able to put a link also to that if you want to watch the video of Stephen and I taking your calls. Not every caller's call quality is great, so I do a apologize about that in the recorded version. Of course, last night I got to go to the finale and I was there in person and I got interviews with the final six plus a few surprise guests on the red carpet. The podcast and video version of that is up on robhasawebsite.com, and I'm going to get into everything with Josh Wiggler as well on the final wiggle room of the season later on today, so be on the lookout for that. Before I get into the podcast version of Stephen and I taking your calls, let me take a moment and thank our sponsor. And this is an appropriate one since we waited all season for the other shoe to drop from the edge of extinction, and last night it did finally drop. I want to take a moment and thank Rothy's. Rothy's are the everyday flats for life on the go, stylish and versatile. They go with everything from yoga pants to dresses to skirts. The amazing thing about Rothy's, it's going to blow your mind, is that their shoes are made from recycled plastic water bottles, I guess, and much like Chris Underwood, a recycled Survivor contestant who goes on to win the game, Rothy's has diverted 25 million water bottles from landfills and turned them into their amazing shoes. Rothy's are seamlessly crafted from the recycled water bottles. They're ultra comfortable as soon as you slip them on. There is no break-in period with these shoes. Yahoo editors have called them the most comfortable flats that they've ever owned. Rothy's also comes with free shipping and free returns and exchanges. No risk, no worries, and no reason not to give them a try. Rothy's are fully machine washable. They're manufactured in a zero-waste factory, and they ship directly in the shoebox with no unnecessary packaging. You're going to quickly discover why BuzzFeed called them your forever shoes. So go ahead and give them a try. Nicole has a pair. She loves them as well. Check out all of the amazing styles available right now at Rothys.com/Rob. Go to Rothys.com. That's Rothys.com/Rob to get your new favorite flats, comfort, style, and sustainability. These are the shoes that you've been waiting for. Head to Rothys.com/Rob today. And with that, let's go on over to our special bonus Know-It-Alls coverage of the Survivor finale on FanCred.
The smartest guys around are about to break it down like they've won the game a million times.
Well, actually, they didn't really win the game at all.
Survivor Know-It-Alls.
Yes, that's right. We've got some bonus Survivor Know-It-Alls. The morning after the finale, we've never done this before, but we're doing it today because of FanCred. We are live on the FanCred app, and of course, we're going to make this a podcast as well over for RHAP, for anybody who missed the boat and didn't join us live, because we are streaming on the FanCred app. Good morning, Stephen Fishback.
Good morning, Rob. I really missed you last night. I mean, what a crazy ending to this crazy,
I listened to the show. You said you were happy that I wasn't there.
Well, no, what I missed was, like, Hannah was saying such sensible things that it wasn't easy for me to interject with, like, obviously more correct things.
Oh, yes, Stephen, you had such a read on the whole season. All of your takes were correct. All of the moves that were made were bad because they all didn't work because you had said all along, Chris Underwood will come back and win the game. Watch this. You'll see. You will rue the day you said I was wrong, that Chris Underwood would win this entire thing.
Well, it certainly was an unexpected long shot. And it's crazy because, like, one of the things I was talking about with Hannah, which we've sort of alluded to, is the possibility that when this Ghost Island, when this Edge of Extinction returnee comes back, it basically invalidates the previous, you know, month of strategy. Like, it all meant nothing.
And yes.
So it's like, it's true. It's really upsetting to me. I feel like this is the season that I've most correctly predicted at every step of the way, except like for the most fundamental part of it.
Right. You had the deck chairs on the Titanic in the right place at every turn.
Perfectly ordered. Yeah, exactly.
Let me just really quick set up. So the beauty of being here on the FanCred app is that we can talk to you, the listeners. And so we are ready to go this morning. So if you want to call in, if you're joining us live on FanCred, then you just click the black button to join us on the fan line, and we're going to go ahead and patch you in. Let me just also just set the stage, because I haven't had a chance to talk with Steven at all before we jump into your question. So go ahead and hit that button to get on the fan line, and then you'll talk to our producer, Cam, this morning. He's going to get you all set up, and we're going to take a lot of questions with the Survivor fans this morning, the morning after the Survivor finale. So yeah, Chris is the winner of the season, and I listened to you and Hannah last night on the Know-It-Alls. In the light of day, Stephen, how are we feeling? Do you feel dirty at all about a person who was voted out on day 9 coming back in the game on day was it 36 or 37?
36 actually comes back.
I thought that was the point of contention between Gavin and Victoria. What day? How many days they were together for? 35 or 36?
Well, Chris definitely comes back on day 35.
He comes back day 35, and then Victoria's voted out on 36. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's right.
And so, 13 days in the game. But what a 13 days.
Well, it's
really
true.
Days, but then
the first 2 days were, he was so like unremarkable. It was funny because like Chris had
Steven, oh my god, tell me this wasn't destiny. What was the final vote count at the final tribal council?
It was
9-4.
9-4.
Which was the amount of days that Chris Underwood, we should have known all along, it was meant to be.
Chris actually was 8-5. So it's a little bit off.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Well, he was voted out on day 8, but, you know, it is funny that in those first 8 days, he was like, he kind of had this like, oh, I'm playing the middle thing. He didn't really have that much of an impact on the strategy at Manu. Mm-hmm. And he was voted off like shockingly early. Like he was such like a non-entity that people were making jokes about him and Eric being basically the same person. And, you know, then he comes back and he's got so much charisma. He has so much drive. And it kind of reminded me of when Devin came back with so much what?
Drip. Yeah.
You know, where he was just like supercharged by this second opportunity. If you had told me, I mean, we'd sort of joked about what if someone comes back, wouldn't that be a total mess? Like we had sort of joked about that. I was more okay with it. Now, listen, I really thought Gavin should have won. I was more okay with Chris than I expected to be. And I'm kind of delighted with the whole season. And it's a very, very contentious. So mm-hmm. I want to hear your thoughts.
To me, it was such an unexpected outcome that the spectacle of it thrilled me, where I love to be surprised, but I think that this is going to be a thing that we're going to have to wrestle with. Was Chris the best player? No, he was not. And so how do we sort of like, we got the thrill of the surprise, but the best person didn't win. And I think that this is something that goes on I know what a big sports fan you are, but we make it, you know, crazier that more teams can be involved and the team team that had the best regular season doesn't win, but it's exciting. You know, it's not, you can't predict from the start of the season who's going to win. So I think where Survivor is wrestling with that, what's unpredictability versus predictability, right. And then also something that we talked about a lot with Christian, but the you know, the entropy of it all, of like how great is it to have all that randomness injected in there, and what does that do to the season as a whole? Where, as you said, we spent so much time talking about, you know, every move that was made, and most of it was for naught.
Yeah. I mean, the thing I do want to say, though, is for people, you know, I think a lot of people, this is an incredibly divisive moment. I think a lot of people love Chris's win. Probably many more people, certainly and those that are tweeting at me, feel this is like a grave injustice. You know, it's not necessarily like this is Survivor, the show going off the rails. Like literally last season was one of the best, you know, kind of more classic seasons that the show's ever had. And granted, there were a lot of like advantages and idols in last season, but it was sort of, you know, it was a much more socially strategic season than this season was. You know, you're right. There's some variability, and like twists create that variability. Casts create the variability. You know, when you have someone like Devin's, you know, who's the number one target and yet has, you know, like this like bloodhound sense for idols, that creates variability. So, you know, I don't think this is like the end of the show, right? Because like literally last
definitely
season,
not. Definitely not. Definitely not.
A top five season or 10.
I really think that that it would have been a more controversial morning had Devin's ultimately won the season, because I think that there were people that love Rick Devin's, and look, count me among the people that I love Rick Devin's. I got to talk to him last night, and you know, nice as can be. I thought he really got unfairly treated by a lot of people online during the course of the season. And now he goes from the person who was shoved down your throat as the winner to the you should have won guy. And I hope that things get a little easier for him on these Twitter and Reddit streets for the time for the now going forward for Rick Devin's.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I remember saying when Ben won was, you know, that this fire twist, like, which seemed a way for the Bens of the world who were getting voted out in fourth place to make it to the end. One of the things I said at the time was like, it's not, you know, getting that person the win doesn't necessarily make a better story. Like part of the incredible emotion of Survivor is seeing someone just come up short.
Yeah.
And like, that's what makes the journey so powerful. And I mean, cold consolation for Rick Devin's, but I really feel like that makes his story all the more moving. It's just like how hard he played and how close he was, and yet he didn't win at all.
Okay, let's get into taking your calls. Now that we set the table here, let's talk to Megan in Raleigh on the morning after the Survivor finale. Steve and I did all my red carpet interviews last night. Very, very fun. Got to talk to Reem as well. So it was a real thrill for me last night. All right, here's Megan in Raleigh. Megan, good morning.
Hey, guys.
Good morning for me. It's afternoon for you.
Yeah, that's okay.
I've been awake for about 45 minutes.
So my question for you is this. Am I crazy, or the advantage Aubrey won
yes.
on Edge of Extinction, that to practice the challenge, that was not the challenge that they ultimately
that
did.
Was a part of the challenge.
The
that was
part. Yeah. And actually, Aubrey really stumbled in that that part of the challenge. Interestingly, like, yeah, it was like going through the ropes, like weaving through the ropes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
okay.
It was a very physical challenge for the players to get back into the edge of from the edge of extinction. Even more so, I think, than the first time around. I think that there was a physical component to the challenge that Rick Devin's won to get back in. But it just in talking to Reem last night, I had asked her about, you know, I really thought that you were going to be the person to get back in, Reem. She was like, dude, did you see that challenge? Do you think I could do that? Compete with Captain America and Joe? And so, yeah.
Hey, one's Captain? I thought, which one's Captain America?
Captain America is Chris.
Oh, okay.
That Joe would be Thor in this scenario.
Oh, I see. And who's Iron Man? Who's got the suit?
I don't know. Who's Iron Man out of that group? War Dog?
One of the things that I think must have been so, and I talked about this a little bit with Hannah last night, is like that must have been so hard for those contestants like Reem and like Aubrey, is like sitting there knowing there's just no way you're gonna win, but you can't give up. Mm-hmm. So you have to like suffer for like a month and just with no realistic win in sight.
I don't know if Aubrey necessarily was that fatalistic about it. We'd have to ask her, because I think that Aubrey does CrossFit, and she also had the advantage to practice. So I don't think that Aubrey looked at it like she was drawing dead, like maybe Reem might have.
Yeah. I mean, those challenges, though, were like very like, you know, it's not like, you know, Aubrey has excelled in Survivor challenges. She's won a number of immunities. But you know, those were, that was like a giant obstacle course challenge, which is typically do favor men.
Yeah. All right. Megan, we want to get to a lot of calls this morning, but thank you so much.
Thank you so much for calling in.
Okay. All right. So we're going to go to Brent in Cincinnati. Uh-oh. Let's go ahead and get Brent in Cincinnati on the line to talk with us about everything that's going on. I know Brent in Cincinnati.
Brent in Cincinnati.
Yes, it's Brent Walgamon in Cincinnati. Oh, my gosh. Yes. Okay.
Hey, what's up, Rob?
Brent in Cincinnati. Go ahead.
I don't get a what's up.
Oh, he... Yeah. Oh, I was about ready to say hello, Steve. No, when he asked, when the producer came on and asked me where I'm from, he really wanted to know. And I was like, I'm from Cincinnati. And then he came back and said, you know, where are you from again? I'm like, I'm from Cincinnati.
Okay.
That's where it came from.
Brenton, Cincinnati.
Yeah, I know. Right. Look, I have no problem with, Chris as winner, as him as the person. Just FYI.
Okay.
But he's a great guy. But the concept of him winning is just crazy to me. What I want to ask you is, honestly, Rob, and I don't know, to be honest, how honestly you can answer this. Does Survivor have a problem with women? I just feel like everything, all of the innovations, all the things that Survivor has done to evolve the game in the past 2-3 years has all favored men. And I feel like the show likes men better.
Well, I would be careful with that. I think that not all men, for instance, you know, like if you are a man who is not playing a, you know, traditional alpha male type game, then I don't think that you are necessarily favored rubric of what we're looking at. But then here comes Chris and he comes back and wins challenges.
I just think that it's amazing, since, you know, they started this Final Four fire making challenges, and with the advent of more advantages and idols in the game, it's not a surprise to me that the last four winners have been men.
Yeah. Although three out of the four people were men, and Julie ends up being in the finals, and she ends up getting no vote. So I don't know necessarily if it's you know, if the right woman got to the end, if it would be a different story. But I definitely hear what you're saying.
I mean, the thing I'll say is that it's become more advantage and idol focused, right? No question about that. They're putting more advantages. They're putting more idols back into the game. And, you know, one of the things we've seen in the past couple seasons, last season being a great example, was women realizing that men were finding the predominance of these advantages and idols. Now, I think part of that is because of the way that the groups kind of naturally fall into traditional gender dynamics, where it's like the women are back at camp and the guys are going out foraging, and like they kind of have more of like the cover to like look for idols as a result. And, you know, I think, and hopefully we see that changing, you know, where the women aren't doing that anymore, right? They're going out and hunting for idols just as much as the guys are. And so hopefully that awareness, you know, does maybe shift that style a little bit.
I hope so. Because I was really disappointed with just the overall feeling of last night. I really feel like that the show deserves to, this situation warrants like you pounding the church altar a little bit, Rob, but it's up to you. I was just aghast.
Well, what do you want me to do, Brent?
It's that this is foolish. This is Survivor's hitting on itself, Rob.
Look,
like somebody like Reem, who's never even met Gavin, can vote for
But that's
him?
Not because she's a woman.
No, I'm moving on to a different topic.
Oh, okay.
I'm irritated at the fact that this is what gets us, because I feel like the show as a whole wants more alpha male type winners. And
I don't know if it's necessarily that. I think that the show wants less passive gameplay. And so That's what I don't think that the show has an agenda about. We only want men to win the show because plenty of women watch Survivor. I don't think that they have an agenda, except for the agenda is that if the choice is between, Rick Devins being on camera and having, witty lines and then, running around and doing stuff as opposed to, the Gavins and Victorias sitting back and being more passive, they want their show to be more action driven.
But Rob, it's like the chicken or the egg, though. I was talking to someone else about this, and they're like, well, Rick has a great personality and Victoria seems kind of boring. I don't know her very well. I'm like, in the last episode, Rick had 10 confessionals, mm-hmm. and Victoria had no more than 4. So how it's no surprise to me that people come to me and say, well, Rick is so much more compelling. I feel like I know him.
Yeah.
You do.
That in terms of, being quick and witty and having one liners, that's good. You can get those into confessionals. I think it's harder that somebody like Victoria, I think she's more like a Aubrey Plaza, where it's like her humor is like very dry and, is maybe not as a quick. And I mean that in terms of like, she might have like some like cutting remarks that are like longer to deliver than where Rick jumps in and just, blurts things out. So
Aubrey had more time on the edge of extinction than anybody, right? Like, she gives great confessionals. Aubrey's an amazing character. And I think that, as Rob always says, like, they're going to give the good stuff. They're not like holding back on great confessionals from women, because like of some like gender, desire for gender imbalance.
You don't show people, we can't get to know them. So it's like a circle that keeps going. Mm-hmm. But, I know you have your positions on this, and I respect them. And to be clear, Chris is a wonderful guy, and I wish all the best in the world for him. But this finale, it was just disappointing last night to hear you talk even so, and I love you to death, but like expound so much on how great and what a spectacle it was. I feel like that's feeding the beast. Like, it was a spectacle, but that doesn't mean it was good.
Yeah, Steven said that Gavin should have won.
No, but I did defend the finale itself, to Brent's point, for just being like, and look, it took me a minute, I initially was like, what on earth is happening? And then I was like, but I noticed I was like having a lot of fun,
I thought it was a great finale in terms of, yeah. I was on the edge of my seat there at the show. It was wild. So
I saw you, Brent, you tweeted at Brian Corden, Brian said, I'm turning the TV off. You said, turn it back on.
Well, it's because he was talking about Rick winning, and I'm like, well, that's not going to happen now. Can't believe it. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I don't want to take up all of your time. You guys are great.
Okay.
I'm not a hater. Yes. I love the show.
Yeah.
No, my gosh. Like, haters is like, it's what drives. It's like, it's all like, I mean, that's what,
I always know that your comments are with love for the show that you love, that you want to make sure that it is not going off the track too far.
100%. Just like, keep it global. We fell in love with the show 20 years ago. You don't have to change it that much.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Can you imagine Survivor Africa on the air today?
Yeah. And I do think that the fire making does favor the male contestants. Have we seen a woman win the? I mean, there wasn't a woman in the fire making this season, but I think that Mike beat Kara last season. Wendell beat Angela, I believe. And then it was, who did Ben beat Devin? So there's only been two women in the fire, but it's been a male winner of the fire making challenge four times out. And I think that the selection also favors men being involved in getting the chance to make the fire too.
And I actually think part of that could be part of gender roles too. Like I said, it's weird how quickly like very stereotypical gender roles like play out at camp. Not like, and I've noticed on all of my seasons, it's like guys who want to be the fire guy, mm-hmm. like they're the fire guy. And like my first season, Token Sheens, no question, the best person at making fire was Sydney, followed by Taj. But it was always guys who were doing it. You know, they were always like striking sparks and blowing the fire to life.
Justin from New York is on the line as we're talking about this. So yeah, I mean that if you want to get on Survivor for anything, I think that the final four fire making challenge, while exciting, I think is always going to favor for the most part the male contestants. Okay, all right, Justin.
Justin, hello.
Hey, and I want to add on that. The one time that a woman won the fire making challenge, it was Becky Thunder.
It was what? No, don't forget about Mama C beat Rodney in Worlds Apart. So, you know.
Yeah, but just as far as not a good look for women, he took out that was quite a while.
That took a while. That did take a while. Yes.
Under Worlds Apart. So.
Okay. All right, Justin. Let's hear your question. That I feel like your sound's a little choppy for me.
Okay, yeah. If I get a little closer, is that better?
You're good. But let's get your question.
Yeah. So I want to say I'm thrilled with last night's outcome. My winner pick was Chris. Obviously, expect that.
He's got kind of like a Chris Underwood look going on, Stephen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe that's why I don't know. But I just want to know from your perspective, what you think was his best move? Was it convincing Lauren to play her idol? Was it when he took off the net and fire? When he swayed a majority of the United jury to vote?
Okay. So best move for Chris Underwood. Stephen, do you have a thought on that as we answer Justin's question?
I mean, I think definitely the best and most shocking move was him taking off his immunity necklace, giving up the immunity and going to fire to win his way into the end. It was so good for so many reasons. First, it was genuinely shocking, right? Like it was this moment for both viewers and the jury where they're like, oh my God, he's really doing this. And in terms of like giving the jury spectacle, like what a great moment. The other thing was it really like we talked a little bit about like story, and this Chris sold the story of Rick Devins is the guy to beat and I'm the one who beat him. And that was his big talking point. And I kind of think that was like the show's narrative too, right? Like the show's narrative. And a lot of people are like, this show is all over the place. There's no consistent narrative. I don't think that's true. The narrative of the show was like Rick Devins was the guy to beat. And then some, you know, wandering knight comes in from far away and beats him. And like, that's the guy who they award.
Not to get Game of Thrones on it, but it was like, who will be your champion to take on the mountain, Tyrion? I will be your champion. And it goes better for Chris Underwood, as he's the one who steps into the arena. And in talking with Rick Devins last night, the show made it seem a little bit like, Devins doesn't know what he's doing. But that, from what I understand, this was like a record time for Chris Underwood. And Devins feels like that he could have beaten either Gavin or Julia in the fire making challenge. So he did such a great job of just setting up that narrative of, hey, everybody, you know what? Like he beat Devins at his own game of, okay, I will make the compelling spectacle at Tribal Council and get that jury's jaw to drop when I take the necklace off, put the necklace on Julia. And where we talk about so many times, Stephen, where the people that get brought to the end, that they don't do well. It's like, hey, I'm going to bring this person and they get no votes. Chris brought two people to the end. He made Gavin and Julie both of his goats in that scenario.
That's a great point. That's a really, really great point. That's fun. Yeah.
Yeah. And I wonder now, will people who play in the future season, as long as this fire making challenge, will we see this be the norm? Hey, I won the final four immunity. Got to make the fire.
I just don't think it's ever as clear. You know, it's so rarely this clear where you're like, this is the guy, like the jury is cheering for him. The other contestants are literally cheering for him every tribal. By the way, one point I want to give David Bloomberg some credit. One point of his.
Don't let it go to his head.
One point of his that I kind of like dismissed was that the contestants should have been building up their own cases a little bit more rather than, you know, applauding Rick all the time.
And while you're making that point, let's bring in Josh from Anderson, South Carolina.
But you know, I thought like the whole narrative was like, well, these guys, it doesn't matter. Like if Rick's there, he wins. But then you see like Gavin's whole problem is that nobody thinks he did anything. You know, like,
I thought Gavin was bad at the final tribal council. I thought he did not do a good job.
he has some thunderous lines, but he's not like a super like extroverted speaker.
Yeah. As soon as he started talking, I'm like, he's backpedaling. He's on defense. That's not how you want to play the Final Tribal Council. All right, Josh in South Carolina. What's going on?
Josh, hello. Hey.
How's it going?
Great.
Good, how are you?
My question is simple. I think this is going to have a lot. I'm going to take my headphones out and hear myself. I think this might be like controversial. Do you think Chris can still win the game if he doesn't have the Edge of Extinction idol? So I feel like there's a shot where Lauren plays her idol at Final Six for him, and Devin's could play his idol for Chris at Final Five.
Yeah.
It's a really good question. Like, does Devin's want Chris in the game at that point? Because Devin's does give him back his idol. Now, maybe that was
loyalty the whole time.
Yeah.
So he might.
Yeah. Mm. It's a really, like, yeah, not even just for loyalty. Like, does he want him there? I have no idea. Like,
my biggest problem with how last night went was I don't think that Chris should have gotten any idol when he came back into the game. Agreed. If you wanted to give him something, maybe give him an extra vote at the Final Six. So like, I feel like that you could have given, if you have to give him something, give him something that's not okay. Well, he's going to be immune for one of these rounds if he makes it through. And he did get three votes at that Final Five Tribal Council. So he should have been out of the game at five, but you know, it is what it is. But I hate the idea that we gave immunity to somebody who came back in the game at six. He had immunity at the Final Seven, Final Eight, Final Nine, Final Ten, Final 11, Final 12, Final 11. He got all that immunity. So yes. Okay. So you guys said it last night, and then, you know, here's also another cookie for, after your reward, Steven.
Go ahead.
No, I just, that, so I really did not, like that part of it. Now, again, kudos to Chris for he played everything so well in
he played the game in front of him
at the finale. But I kind of felt like that Devin's not giving the half an idol to him. I don't know how you pull that off, Steven. Was that like a real move that somebody could do? I mean, what was Devin's going to do? Throw it in the ocean and then be like, "Sorry, dude, you just got played."
Dave didn't give back the half idol to Devin's.
He said, like, well, I don't think I want to give it back to you until we get back on the same page. He didn't say I'm not giving it to you. Like I guess Dr. Mike threw the strap from Lauren Rimmer in the fire at a tribal council. But I mean, that's like an all time heel move for Rick Devin's. But maybe does the jury turn on Rick Devin's if he does something so dastardly to Chris?
No. Well, first of all, the one mitigating thing I want to say about that idol, which I agree that I'm against it, but the one mitigating thing is that it did require one of the other players to use it or to give back the half. And I actually think that's a relatively steep bar. Like, that is another player who's left in the game, seeing this guy who we all agree should be a huge threat, making the conscious strategic decision, I am going to keep this guy here. So it wasn't just like, you know, he gets this superpower. He has to convince one of the people that he deserves that superpower, or that they want to keep him in the game. And I think if it was any other situation other than Rick being the giant target that he was, and maybe Rick being the mensch that he is, I don't think that person would necessarily do it.
Also, now, Rick is somebody who was in that same position of had to give the idol to somebody so he could relate on every single level of like, oh, I know what it's like to come back into the game and not have a friend. And I know what it's like to give that half an idol away and then wait for the other person to give it back to you. So that was smartly played by Chris.
I mean, but I think it is sort of splitting hairs because, like, you know, is it that much better at that point, right? They're both in the Final Four together. The question
Thank
is, like,
Josh,
is it better for Rick to have Chris around versus Lauren around? I don't necessarily see one or the other as being so hugely advantageous or disadvantageous to his game.
So you mean to give half the idol to Lauren?
No, I'm saying, like, if he did not give half the idol to Chris, the idea is that Chris would be voted out at five. Therefore, Lauren would be in the game. You know, and we're saying, like, is that a huge blunder for Rick to keep the guy in the game who eventually beat him? But, like, Lauren could have been the person who eventually beat him. Like, is, like, from Rick's perspective at the final five,
from what it sounds like,
worse to have Chris than Lauren?
If, from what it sounds like, that Chris might have been the one person that could have beaten Devin's at the Fire Maiden. Now, maybe Gavin tells a different story, but it sounds like that Devin knew what he was doing with the fire making, but Chris was just the best on the board at making the fire. So,
well, if that's the case, then that was a mistake.
Yeah, I don't know what that looks like, and maybe I'm being naive about, like, how do you not give the idol back to the person and, like, live at the camp where you know, it's just like, is it just like Chris is like, Devin's, can I have that half the idol back? Nope. Come on, Devin's, what are you doing? What are you doing? Like, how do you live with the person for you know, 24 hours? Like, dude, give it back to me. I won't do it. You're dreaming. Think I'm giving you that half an idol.
I mean, yeah, you're not getting that person's vote, but if it, like, you know, if that's the edge that gets you to the win, then yeah.
It's a tough move. It's a tough move.
And, you know, you're like, you know, human sentiment does come into it a lot. Yeah. And certainly on first timer seasons.
I think you'd have to do something like, all right, I'll give it to you at tribal. And then when you're at tribal, just like throw it into the bushes, like off the set, because I just don't know how you tell the person in the daytime you're not giving it to them and then live with that person and not just have the person like strangle you on the beach that day.
Yeah, I mean, there's also like the danger of sending someone who's like that salty against you to the jury. Like, even though from all, you know, from everything we've seen, like the jury was rabidly pro Devin's, you know, he doesn't necessarily know how rabid, you know, how rabid they are. And to send someone as the last juror, or I guess second to last juror in that case, to the jury, just like furious. That is a somewhat high risk move.
All right, let's go to Holly from New Jersey on the fan line. Okay, Holly, are you there? We'll talk to Holly.
Hello,
on the
Holly.
Yes, Holly, how are you?
So, hi, I have a question. My question is really, like, how much do you think it was a combination of Chris's social game and social dynamics at the edge, or how much of it was really that final move with giving the net foot? Because I heard a lot of, like, even if we're asking Joe why he voted for Joe, he said, like, oh, he just had such on the edge. My question, like, if he just wins the doesn't do any of the fire thing, goes crazy. And I think the real question of this.
Okay, good question. Holly, I'm in a little bit of trouble hearing you, but I think we got the question, which is if not for all of the theater from Chris, does he ultimately come back and win the game in basically, does he not, you know, I guess it's hard because part of what he did was knocking Rick Devin's out at four. So I think that presumably Devin's is going to beat him if he ends up going against Devin. So it's hard to sort of parse that, Steven.
Well, let's say Devin's doesn't have an idol and he doesn't have immunity. Like, let's say Rick Devin's gets out by sort of a consensus vote. Chris is sitting there at the end with the same people. I don't know. Like, I honestly think that Chris had to do something. He had to give the edge people a reason. You know, he had to be able to say, and I talked a little bit about this with Hannah last night, how, you know, the contestants really care about the theme of the season. Like, they believe in
War
the
Dog said the theme is not on trial. You are.
Right. And so, like, you know, he has to say, like, I came back from the edge and then I did this because I was on the edge. And if he doesn't have anything where he can say that, like, maybe they don't award him the win. But, you know, it was probably a lower bar than what he did. You know, he did so much. He probably had to do like one of those 10 things.
You know, it's also interesting, and I think that this is a factor of these big juries. When you take a look at the votes that Gavin got versus the votes that Chris got, when we look at the Gavin votes, they were Rick, they were Lauren, they were Kelly and Aurora. And for the most part, you know, three out of those four were the people that were in the game very late and basically played most of the time. And then also Kelly, who was, you know, a Gavin fan, and everybody else from who voted out earlier were the Chris votes. And, you know, it's been interesting to see a lot of these juries end up get split. The Dominic and Wendell was the same thing. The five people that were out earlier voted for Dominic. The five people who were out later voted for Wendell. And when you look at the votes between Nick and Mike, it was also very similar that a lot of the people that were voted out later were votes for Mike, and people voted out earlier were votes for Nick. So that the flashier player tends to get these votes from the early jury members, and the people that played more of the subtle game, more of the social game, they get the votes from the later jury members.
That's really interesting. I mean, there's obviously a lot of reasons that could go into that.
When you have a 13-person jury, the deck is stacked against the social player. Yeah,
yeah. That's a really, really interesting observation.
Whereas if you have a 7-person jury, then if you have the last four, then you're good.
Yeah, 13, not so much. Like all the people who voted against him were the people he betrayed. And the fact that he was a social player meant that in order to vote people out, he really had to betray them, right? Like, he had to vote out the people in his own alliance. And, you know, that's a sting that does take a lot of time to recover from. And so maybe it's not surprising that those people voted against him.
Yeah.
Whereas obviously Chris did not have to do that, right? He voted out Reem, who voted for him, but they had a lot of time to heal those wounds.
Here's Cliff from New York. Let's get Cliff on the line here on Fan Cred as we're talking with Stephen Fishback the day after the Survivor finale. Cliff from New York. Cliff.
Hey, Cliff. What's up, guys?
Yes.
One thing, I am a genuine, I love all Survivor, the twists, whatever, not a big deal to me. I'll take it all in. What I wanted to ask about is Chris addressing Gavin at the final drive.
Oh, that didn't go over well.
It didn't go over well, but I thought that it might have helped get him gain Wardog and some of the more aggressive players' votes. What do you guys think?
I mean, I don't think it's that unusual for like contestants in the final tribal to call each other out at the final tribal. The fact that it didn't go over well.
JT did that to you, right, Steven?
Yeah, but a lot of people do it. And often will, like, you know, I have written in many seasons about how, like, what a great move it was for this contestant to throw that contestant under the bus or like recontextual, you know, like, so I don't think it's that rare. I mean, maybe with this giant jury, they're also desperate to have their last word that it's, you know, they were upset that they were taking it.
We'll ask the questions around here, Chris.
yeah.
Relax. Who do you think you are? I don't think it changed anybody's votes. I think that Wardog was very invested in Chris coming back in, speaking with Wardog briefly. He was telling me about how, you know, they talked a lot on the Edge of Extinction, what things were going to be like for the person, what the strategy should be for the person who comes back into the game. So I don't think that Wardog's vote was at all in question. So I think that even though people said they hadn't made up their minds, I think that, you know, Chris did come in with a lot of votes in his pocket, and I don't think that necessarily changed anything.
It is wild to think that he had it wasn't just a month away. It wasn't just the time to heal personal bonds. They basically came to like a strategic consensus with like how many people, 13 really smart Survivor players, including some, you know, three-time players, of how to play the game when you got in. Chris isn't just coming out back with like perspective. He's coming back with a battle plan that's been forged by a whole army of consultants.
Yes. What's better, having Rob and Sandra tell you what to do or 10 other Survivor players?
Hey, it's a tough one. Yeah.
Smarten up, Sestanino. You know what's up. All right. Well, Cliff, thank you so much for the call, okay? All right.
I didn't even think about how next season you've just got like.
Oh, I'm so excited. I'm so thrilled.
You're set for impersonations.
I'm thrilled for. You know what? If people don't like it, then, whatever.
Who sounds more like Reem? You or Reem?
You know what? Dude, I love Reem. Put her out there. Let Reem play again. Jacob from Chicago is on the fan line. Let's go ahead and talk to Jacob. Okay, Jacob, are you there, buddy? Let's go ahead and get him on the fan line. Steven, are you pumped up for the Island of Idols?
I am.
I'm okay. Pumped up for all the hey guys.
Can oh, here's Jacob. Hey, Jacob's pumped up too. Okay, Jacob, what's going on?
Hey guys, I'm pumped. I'm pumped for all the impressions next year.
Yeah.
Oh my god, you guys are wearing the same shirt.
Oh, I mean not exactly, really. But
yeah.
Okay.
Hey guys, I got a couple questions for you. First of all, I was thinking about Julie being another Zero Blow mom finalist. You know, she's kind of in the archetype of a Shelley, Monica, Dawn. Mama C, I guess, got one vote demographic problem when it comes to these women who seem to can't, they seem to not be able to get, you know, to be taken seriously when it comes to Final Shrinkle.
Chrissy, I mean, what was interesting about, like, you know, Chrissy had that, you know, was sort of cast as like the mom, right? And she like both played into and played against that sort of classic archetype and, you know, narrowly lost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's sort of dangerous to say every woman who plays Survivor that's in her late 30s or 40s is, you know, is the same. You know, to me, Mama C is not the same as, right. You know, a Julie or a Chrissy. You know, I think that they all have different attributes. It seemed like that the jury, you know, was... felt like that Julie was emotional and also did not have a resume. And I feel like that they had to do a lot of caretaking of Julie. And I feel like that she did not have a lot of moves or even a story that she could own in terms of the game. And it felt like that earlier in the game, when the narrative was Kama Strong and she was sort of being one of the co-pilots of Kama Strong with Eric and Ron, that was where I think that she had a claim to the game. But once the Eric vote happened, that was really where she lost her footing, and she tried to claim ownership of a move that it seemed to offend people on the jury, that she claimed ownership of Julia going home. Julia herself seemed to balk at that. So did Wardog and Rick Devins, people who were more active in that tribal council when she jumped ship. And then she really never had a solid footing. She talked about being the pilot of her own smaller plane at that point in time, but she never really, you know, dictated a vote in the minds of the jury. And I think that that's important to be able to, you know, say why you were the best. So she claimed that her emotions were a strength. I think that people viewed them as a weakness. And so it would not be.
I thought she had a really poor final tribal, which probably contributed enough final travel before she did win a couple of individual immunities and she got herself there.
Yeah.
I mean, is that enough? Probably not.
I do think that in this final tribal council format, more than ever, I do think it's really important to, you know, own what you did, put the narrative out there of this was my game, this is what I did, and give the jury, you know, a story they can sink their teeth into. And Julie did not have that. And was it because she's a mom or because of the, you know, the game that ultimately got her there? You know, that's for the jury to decide.
Yeah, Sandra's a mom. She's won twice.
Yeah,
you're right. I do have one more quick
question. All right, real quick.
I'm wondering, we've seen twist.
Sorry, one more time, Jacob.
The moving the headphones in and out is killing the mic on them. So just keep them in one spot. No, it's okay.
We've had FireMaker winners win the game 3 out of 4 times since that started. You know, I think it adds to our resume in an impressive way that gets votes. So I'm wondering, is that going to become too much of an automatic thing that twist becomes moot because it becomes such an automatic win?
We can hope so, but I don't think that is going to be the case, because we saw Mike White ultimately make the fire last season and have a not so strong final tribal council performance and ultimately lose the game to Nick. So I don't know if it's an automatic to make the fire and win.
Yeah, and as you said, Carolyn also lost to Mike. Obviously, mm-hmm. That was not the fire-making twist, but that was fire-making.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to Trevor in Vancouver on the fan line. Trevor, are you there, Stephen, as we are sitting here the first day of the Survivor offseason, where when we reconvene, we'll talk about Boston Rob and Sandra in season 39. Okay.
I can't wait. It's going to be so fun.
Trevor.
Hey, how's it going?
How are you, buddy?
Hey, I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Great.
Yeah, so I thought the finale was actually pretty entertaining. I hope they never do the twist again, but I thought it was super entertaining.
Mm-hmm. I think that's how a lot of people feel. Like, it's like a fun one-off, but that's good.
I think I was most confused about Victoria's final tribal council vote. I was shocked that she voted for River One.
Yeah, well, I have some insight into that. I talked to Victoria on the red carpet and in my interviews that are up on Rob Has a Podcast. And I asked her, I said, Victoria, I would have bet anything you were a Gavin vote. And she said, well, you know, I felt like that Gavin betrayed me at the final six and I was mad at him. And so I didn't vote for him. And when I said,
is that a reason to vote for him?
Nope. Well, not for everybody's not different, Stephen. No, right. She said, nobody should ever trust me. And she told me, and I turned around and said, well, Gavin, you've got my vote. And she said, I did that so because I hoped that everybody would vote him out after that.
Yeah. I did think it was a weird thing to say if she wanted him to win, because that would create a huge target on him. So as always, Victoria was in the right.
Yeah. You know. It was like the reverse Davey I guess it was the same as Davey, because who did this? And Mike White was like, I did. And then, well, you got my vote tonight. So if somebody says that you have my vote, I think that it's suspect on the way out.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was what Victoria's thinking was.
Other quick thing is if hypothetically, if Chris were to play again, is he a target? Is he going all the way?
It's a good question. I mean, is he like more of a threat now?
I think he's painted with the same Joe brush, Stephen, where you got to get this guy is going to win all the challenges after the merge. You know, it's ironic because I know you tweeted something similar about this, where we said coming in, oh, this season is designed for a Joe win. Watch, because Joe, he's going to win. He wins the challenges. He'll get voted out. He can come right back in and win these challenges at the end of the game. And well, not exactly. It wasn't Joe, but it was somebody from the Joe mold who was able to take advantage of this.
And it really almost was Joe. And it's an interesting, it is such an interesting question. Like, would Joe have been able to pull it out had it been actual Joe?
Yeah. And this question, I did not ask War Dog this question, but I was at, I heard War Dog ask this question, and he says that no, that Joe could not have done what Chris did.
Because he couldn't have finessed that final six vote.
Yes,
I mean, he might have been immune at that point. Yeah. Like, Joe is a better challenge.
According to War Dog, that it was not the fact that he came back and won. It was that he came back and played.
That's interesting, and that's always been the critique of Joe, even in Cambodia, was that he's not really a gamer. You know, he's a great challenge competitor, but he's not much of a gamer.
Steven, what do you think of Joe's new haircut?
He looks handsome with any haircut.
Yeah. Yeah.
He needed at least a trim. I mean, it really was like, it was getting long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll see if it saps him of his strength like he predicted. All right. Thank you so much, Trevor. Okay. All right. Let's do two more calls and start to wrap up as we head to the top of the hour. Let's go to Connor in New York on the fan line. Okay. Let's bring in so many people in New York, Stephen.
It's a great city.
It's in state. And state.
Great state.
All right. Here's Connor. Connor, how are you?
Hey, Connor.
Good. I'm good. How are you?
Great.
My question is, so Aubrey and David are two players that in the past have seemed to really value strategic gameplay, especially Aubrey, who maybe lost to someone because of a bitter jury.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of their decision to vote for Chris over someone who is more silent and strategic like Gavin?
Mm-hmm. Look,
well, it's funny, like the Michelle, I mean, there are Michelle Chris parallels, right? Where Michelle is basically quiet the entire game. And then in the last episode, just like turns it on, wins challenges.
But I think a difference in terms of like the edit. Sure. You could say that, but I mean, Aubrey spent more days in the game with Chris than she did with almost anybody else. I mean, she was on the edge of extinction with Chris for easily. I mean, if Aubrey goes out, what, day 12 or 13, and then they come back into the game. So she's on the edge of extinction with Chris for, you know, 22, 23 days. Chris might have been her best friend in the whole game.
Hannah made the really good point last night. You know, we've talked about how like these, like, of course they're going to want to vote for someone who they've built these bonds with over time at the edge of extinction. Hannah made the sort of additional point that, you know, Chris played the game. They all fantasized could have been themselves. Me. Like every one of them was like, I'm going to go and I'm going to win immunities and I'm going to play idols and I'm going to give up fire making, you know, and like he just played this like fantasy game that they were projecting for themselves. And so, you know, like how do they not award that?
Right. Yeah. I was thinking that maybe they wanted to validate that they could win if they came back.
Yeah. I think that's probably it. It's like, otherwise, like what was I doing out there? If like, if I could never have won, even if I played the perfect, you know, 4 days, 5 days, why was I there at all? So like, right.
The theme was not on trial, Connor.
Yeah. But well, Hannah, again, like, so sorry that I keep referring to Hannah. You should listen to that podcast. It's a great podcast with Hannah last night. Hannah said that the twist won, you know, kind of like it wasn't like even Chris won. It was like the twist won.
All right. Connor, thank you so much. Yeah. Steven, in terms of the twist won, is there anything that the players in the game could have done to prevent the twist from winning one way or another?
Yeah, vote Chris out at the final six.
But then Rick Devens is probably going to win.
No, why? Like then they all have the chance to beat him at fire. But they had this clear shot at Chris, and honestly, like for me, a lot of why I was okay with Chris's win is that he did survive this one vote where he wasn't immune and he didn't have an idol, mm-hmm. you know, his own idol.
Yeah.
It's like, but the other contestants were like tripping over themselves to give that to him.
Yeah. And I think that Chris as a player, I think demonstrated a very impressive skill set in terms of coming back where that he could well be a triple threat that ultimately was taken out too soon, where I think that he demonstrated a lot in a short amount of time. He kind of got voted out of the game in very wacky circumstances where he kind of got framed for something that he talked to War Dog about a plan, and then that got back to Kelly Wentworth of Chris is trying to vote you out, but it was really David Wright and Devens that were sort of pushing that agenda, and Chris wanted to talk things through with War Dog, and so he sort of was framed as the architect of trying to get Kelly Wentworth out of the game when he wasn't. And so I don't know if Chris did a lot wrong the first time through to get voted out of the game. So I don't think he wins if he doesn't get voted out of the game that early on, based on the way that the season went.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He had, I've spoken to War Dog about that vote, and War Dog has told me that it was not just the sort of information shuttling. It was also that he kind of wanted to isolate Kelly more.
Also had said, you know, he identified Chris as a really good player and somebody who was a threat that needed to go.
But my blog for that episode was called In Defense of Chris. You know, I thought it was a mistake to vote him out then.
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously it was a mistake to vote him out then because he ends up winning the season by dint of that elimination.
All right, let's do one last call. Let's do Bodie in Connecticut. Okay. If Bodie is there, okay, let's go ahead and get him on the fan line this morning.
Hello. Bring us home, okay.
Bodie.
Yeah, so I thought that it was really interesting at Final Four when Chris was allowed to pick for Julie who she would bring to the end.
Yeah.
Because she was the one with immunity. So I was thinking hypothetically, what if Julie said, no, I'm not going to bring Gavin. I'm going to bring you, Chris.
Yeah, based on what we saw with, you know, the Dominic Abate thing of, you know, we talked this through, like, well, would Dominic even be allowed to do that? I'm pretty sure that the Survivor producers said to Chris, hey, if you want to do this, you get to pick the person. Okay. So, cause I think they wanted somebody to make this move. So
I think they want spectacle though. If Julie had objected and the two of them are like fighting over like who's not getting immunity, mm-hmm. I'm sure they would have let that play out too. But like Julie wasn't about to object in that moment.
I don't think they were gonna
knew Chris was the best firemaker.
Right. But I don't think that they would allow that moment to get ruined where I think that they have to give Chris some confidence of like, hey, if I do this, do I get to pick who I do? And then you're good, you get to ultimately do it. And if Julie wants to object, I think that Jeff will overrule her objection.
It's interesting. So this is the next stage, right? And now that someone's given up immunity, now the next person has to object to receiving immunity.
No, we all want to make the fire. Jeff, put four things in there. Four of us are going to fire. Yeah. First two to make fire, or first three to make fire, the final three.
Yeah.
So if Julie had been, like, after getting given immunity and she had said, I want to give immunity to Gavin, would that have been like shut down and Julie doesn't have.
If Julie wanted to pass. So this is interesting. So if Julie wanted to hypothetically say, Jeff, and I would like to take the immunity necklace and I would like to give it to Devins to somehow, like, we have to, Chris's move was too huge tonight. He's the biggest threat. Somebody needs to beat Chris in the fire making challenge. Could you re-gift the immunity necklace? I think that that's the better question.
Why couldn't she step up? I think she could be able,
Jeff, I'm jumping ship. I can't do this. We can't stop Chris. He's now the biggest threat. I'm giving my immunity to Devins and I'm going to take Chris on in the fire making challenge. And Devins like, hold on. I'm getting played. I need to give the immunity to Julie. I need to beat Chris for my narrative. So nobody wants it. Throw the immunity necklace in the fire.
That would be such a great move.
The only way to win is to not play. Yeah. Okay.
If Julie can't pick somebody else to take with her, she could give the necklace to somebody else and have them and require that they pick her.
Well, why would they want that? Why would she want that?
I don't know,
you don't want to be the one taken.
There seems like there's no world where this is relevant, but.
Go on.
I feel like that's most of the internet. Yeah. There's no world with it where this is relevant, but.
Yeah. Yeah. I just think that it's an interesting thing to.
It is interesting. It's an interesting question.
Bodhi, thank you so much. Okay.
Yeah. No, thank you for having me.
Steven, this was so much fun to get to talk things through with you the day after. We've never done this.
Yeah, this is great because we have a little more perspective, but not as much perspective as we'll have. So it's like a nice level of like, I still feel very immersed in last night, but I also still feel, I feel a little bit distant.
Yeah.
I mean, I think with more time that this is going to be, I don't know, maybe it'll be seen as worse with more time. You know, maybe like when, I don't know if like with more time, people will sort of like come around to Chris, or with more time, if like when like the fun of the show has sort of faded, people will be even more outraged by this.
Yeah. As we get further away, because it feels like that Chris coming back robbed Rick Devins of the win. So you already were headed for a scenario where somebody who was voted out of the game was going to win. And instead, somebody who was voted out more recently and out of the game for longer came back and won.
Yeah.
So it's really wild. There's many different layers in this. I think that that there are a lot of Rick Devins fans who feel like Rick Devins was robbed. That you and Hannah really made a great case of why Gavin should have been the winner of the season, and I think that that's a compelling case as well. And I think there's a lot of people that are just here for the thrill of Chris coming out of nowhere. Really, if you would have asked me at 4:30 yesterday, what chance does Chris Underwood have to win the game? I would have said 1%. I mean, we never even saw him on the edge of extinction. And we did see him a little bit, but there was probably like a 3 or 4 episode stretch where we didn't even see him on the screen at the edge of extinction. And I complimented Chris Underwood for this last night, but he was so off the social media radar. I was like, in my head, the story I told myself was, oh, well, Chris was a big fan, but he just had a bad experience. And I think he's burnt out on Survivor. I don't think the guy tweeted once during the season.
That's discipline. Good for him. Good for him.
Good for him. And he was so proud of himself. He's like, he's like, I feel like I really owed it to, Jeff and Matt to really play my part. And he did it. And kudos to Chris.
Yeah, truly, truly kudos to Chris. I guess that's the big takeaway. Like there's not much more to say about it.
Not much more to say. Okay. Despite there not being much more to say, I will be with Josh Wiggler later on today on our feedback show on the Wiggle Room after the finale. So we'll get Josh's take on everything that went down in this very wild season of Survivor.
Josh took my favorite tweet of the night.
What did he say?
He said, when everyone thinks you're Dreebergen, but you're actually Devins, and he wrote Devons, and it was a picture, it was a gif of Devin from Survivor 35.
This was not an advantage
Yeah.
So then we'll get into everything with Josh. And Josh was also on location for season 39. And he has an article up today where him and Mike Bloom talked with Boston Rob and Sandra. So we'll get Josh's take on what that was like to be on the set of Survivor 39 as well. So that's coming up in the Wiggle Room. And then still much more to come. I have a This Week in Survivor coming up with Jordan Kalish with a big surprise guest coming up on Monday. And then I've also got everything coming up with. I talked to a lot of people very interested in talking about their game and the postseason interview series coming your way. But Steven,
I'm sure they're desperate to be interviewed about their
games. To a person. They seem very, very excited to being able to tell their story. Steven, great job. Very excited to have one last chance to talk with you, Steven Fishback.
Yeah, this was great, Rob. We never really got a proper goodbye, and so I'm glad that now, you know, you were busy hobnobbing with the Glitterati at the finale, so yes. I'm glad that now we have a chance to really talk about the episode, you know, decompress, and just stare each other in the eyes one last time. We reconvene next September.
All right. So, no, well, I'll talk to you on Sunday night when we get into the Game of Thrones finale. But then
that's a different meeting.
But then after that, I'll talk to you in September.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Have a good one, everybody. Thanks, everybody at FanCred for putting this together. And we will talk to you again soon. Take care. Bye.